Spirit Radio Podcasts.
So our next guest is a member of the British House of Lords since 1997 and is a former MP of the Liverpool Edge Hill and Liverpool Mossley Hill for 18 years. He's an author and outspoken campaigner for human rights and the founder of Jubilee Action, a humanitarian children's charity. No stranger to Ireland, he's going to be in Dublin this Sunday to speak at the Pro-Life Campaign's National Conference. On the line to tell us more, we have Lord David Alton. David, thank you for joining us on the programme this morning.
A pleasure, Wendy. Good morning to you.
Well, we'll have to start first with your Irish connections. Tell us about those.
Well, my mother was from County Mayo, from Tourmacady, and she was a native Irish speaker, and then came to London at the end of the Second World War when she met my dad. And I was born in London, but I went to Liverpool as a student, and that was where I was elected to the House of Commons.
You're very much known as a very outspoken human rights campaigner, and you've never let that get in the way of moving forward in your political career. And in fact, you've really, at various times in your career, Lord Alton, some would say, suffered politically because of this, because of your conscience.
Well, I think it was Thomas More who famously said, "I'm the king's good servant, but God's first." And I think, without getting too dramatic about it, I think there are moments in people's lives where they have to choose between their own personal political preferment and doing what's right. I was very struck by Katie Asco, the president of UCD recently, politically courageous rather than politically correct, willing to speak up for the unborn and sacrificing her position as president of her student union. Or think of the two midwives in Scotland who they tried to bully into carrying out an abortion, and they said, "No, we won't do that. We were called to be midwives, not to take the lives of unborn children." So there have been people who have been rather more courageous than me. I think it's the job of politicians to speak truth to power. And in these last 50 years since Britain legalized abortion, 8.8 million babies have been aborted. That's an extraordinary toll of life. It's one abortion every single 3 minutes in Great Britain, and that's what happens when you change the laws to make these things normative.
Well, that's one thing I wanted to talk to you about, because you have been watching this unfold since abortion was introduced in 1967. Do you think that those who introduced the Abortion Act thought that the consequences would be some of the things that we've seen today in terms of things that you've mentioned there, like a baby aborted every 3 minutes?
Well, Wendy, of course they didn't think that. They said at the time that it would only ever be used in the most extreme circumstances, and all of us would agree that where a mother's life is at risk and two lives are in the balance, then it's legitimate to carry out a termination. But I don't believe that most of those who voted in 1967 believed it would ever lead to one abortion every single 3 minutes, 600 every single day in Britain. Just compare the 8.8 million aborted to the population of Ireland, and you start to then get the picture. Because I think statistics are, well, it was Joseph Stalin who notoriously said that one death is a tragedy, 1 million is a statistic. You have to narrow it down to single lives to start to see the scale of what's happened in Britain. If you told them in 1967 that it would lead, for instance, to abortion up to and even during birth on a baby with a disability, with 90% of all babies with Down syndrome now being routinely aborted, babies with cleft palate, cleft foot, hair, lip, right up to and even during birth, I don't believe that members of the House of Commons in 1967 believed it would lead to all of those things.
When we think about the Irish situation, Lord Alton, you know, a lot of people would say, "Oh, well, that's the UK. That type of thing isn't going to happen here in Ireland." What's your response to that type of an interjection?
There's a phrase, isn't there, Wendy? Smell the coffee. But, you know, just think about the reality of what has happened. In fact, there's the perfect example north of the border in Northern Ireland, which didn't apply the Abortion Act. And there are now 100,000 people alive in Northern Ireland. That's equal to 5% of the population who are alive today who would be dead if the 1967 Abortion Act had applied there. It's not a question of a slippery slope. We're in the quagmire. And it's about money as well. I mean, once you create an abortion industry, then you're providing a context in which people fiercely demand the right to carry out more and more industrialized abortion. It's not just the 8.8 million who have been aborted, the one every 3 minutes. Think about the 86 million pounds that was generated by the abortion industry in Britain just last year. That's three quarters of a billion pounds a staggering amount of money in the last decade. So this is about money-making, and of course there are examples of the young Irish woman, for instance, who was aborted in London at a Mary Stopes clinic, and sadly who died subsequently of extensive internal blood loss. So this is not just about the unborn, this is about women as well. Both lives matter, and that's what should be at the heart of our argument.
How have you seen the culture change over the years, Lord Alton? Because, you know, many people will accept that the law is an educator, and once you change the law, that the culture then changes. And I would imagine the abortion rate was much lower when the law was first introduced, and that did that quickly change over time?
It changed dramatically, even within the first couple of years. Only 29 members of the House of Commons voted against the 1967 Act. Courageous people like Shirley Williams voted against it because they knew that the law inevitably was just going to become normative. When you make something legal, then people believe it's right, so it changes the culture dramatically. And instead of then upholding the right to life of an unborn child, people then say, well, it's just my right to choose. But think about that slogan. It says me, my, I at the heart of the equation, rights, not duties or obligations, and choice. Well, it's not our choice to take the life of another person. You know, there are 30 articles in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and the most important of those is the right to life itself. All the other rights are worthless if you haven't been given the right to be born. So we have to be insistent about this and not be cowed into silence. And I do think it's quite revealing that as you change the culture and people become more and more angry about what they themselves have been involved in, and whether it's for making money or because they've been forced into an abortion, and many women, of course, feel they have no choice because they're then bullied by men into having an abortion because abortion becomes so freely and easily available. And then what follows from that is that people then try to suppress freedom of speech about such issues. And, well, we've seen examples of it in Britain, where a journalist, Tim Stanley, was recently refused the right to speak at Oxford University because he was coming along to speak about the rights of the unborn. Or a member of parliament like Jacob Rees-Mogg is told he should resign for opposing abortion. In 1967, if you'd said that it would lead to these things, people would never have believed you.
Do you think, just touching on some of those examples, is politics becoming more intolerant?
Yes, it is, much more intolerant. And I think that there's an aggression. And why is that? Well, there are now examples of people in England who have had, according to Department of Health figures, more than 8 abortions. And you start to then become very angry, I think, with anyone who dares to say, was this a good thing to do? And that's why my good friend Baroness Nuala O'Loan from Northern Ireland is introducing a bill into the House of Lords in January, which is called the Conscientious Objection Bill, to enable people who are not doctors, because they are covered by our conscience clause, but people like the midwives I referred to, or the pharmacists who have lost their jobs, or the blue-collar workers who have lost their jobs because they've refused to deal with the remains of an aborted baby, those people should be safeguarded by law as well. So Ireland has got to think very carefully about the Eighth Amendment. I mean, once you take this away, you've taken away the safeguards of the unborn child, but you've also changed the culture as well.
How do you feel, Lord Alton? A lot of people who are arguing for the Eighth Amendment to be repealed will often say, you know, Irish women are travelling to the UK. So you've Irish women travelling to your country to have abortion. So there's that argument that, well, it's happening anyway.
Well, there are small numbers of people who come to Britain, and we should be giving them support, not encouraging them to come and abort their babies. And for me, it's not about being against abortion, it's being pro-life for the woman and the child. So, for instance, in Northern Ireland, instead of the British paying, as the British government has decided to do, paying Northern Irish women to come to England to be aborted, and that can range between £1,400 and £2,200 a time. Instead of that, they should be saying to women who become pregnant, we will give you an equal amount of money in order to be able to go ahead and have your child. Supporting people through pregnancy is the answer here, not encouraging them to come to an industry, the abortion industry in Britain, with all its consequences. The Mary Stopes clinics were investigated by the British regulator last year. They found examples of unborn babies that had been thrown into open trash bins. Now, that's not, you know, my pro-life propaganda or something. That was found by the regulator who went into those clinics. And indeed, they've called for changes to be made in those clinics. But as I pointed out already, vast sums of money are made in these clinics. the head of the Mary Stopes organization received a staggering salary last year of over £400,000. There are 22 people working in those clinics who receive over £100,000 a year. It's hard to call this a charity. You can see that this has become a business. And I think people have to understand also the origins of the Mary Stopes abortion clinics and the ideology that underpins abortion. It was Stopes herself who said, and I quote her actual words, "No society should allow the diseased, the racially negligent, the careless, the feeble-minded, the very lowest and worst members of the community to produce innumerable tens of thousands of warped and inferior infants." What kind of ideology is that? It's certainly not something that I would have thought Irish people would ever want to embrace.
What would be your thoughts then, Lord Alton? Because again, the argument is look, we need to harmonise our laws with the rest of Europe and with the UK as well, where it comes to abortion. What's your advice to politicians here in Ireland that are looking at this issue?
Well, I think people ought to harmonise their laws with Ireland rather than the other way around. I think it's very easy to be bullied, often by the politically correct and the illiberal, into accepting laws that have no place in Irish culture or in the Irish mindset. Ireland has always upheld the right to life. And why is that? Because, of course, it understands the enormity of what happens when there is indifference from the state or when you bully people. Think back to even the Irish famine. Malthus, at the time, in a widely quoted comment to Ricardo, urged the depopulation of Ireland. He said, "The land of Ireland is infinitely more peopled than in England, and to give full effect to the natural resources of the country, a great part of the population should be swept from the soil." That's what that was feeding into British policy in the 19th century, and here we now are in the 21st century, where once what was a crime has become an ideology, and people are actually willing to embrace it and to do to themselves what others tried to do to them in the past.
You're going to be speaking at the Pro-Life Campaigns conference this Sunday. What can people expect from your talk?
Well, simply that they should hold on to their values and realise that Ireland is admired by millions of people the world over. And remember, there are many more countries in the world that say the right to life of the unborn child should be safeguarded than are willing to take it. They shouldn't follow the British model. If they do, they may have 8 million reasons to regret it in 50 years from now.
Well, Lord David Alton, thank you so much for talking to us on the programme on Spirit Radio this morning.
Thank you, Wendy.
And Lord David Alton is going to be speaking at the Pro-Life Campaign's National Conference that takes place this Sunday, the 3rd of December, in the RDS Concert Hall. You can get details on their website at prolifecampaign.ie.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.